welcome everyone to tonight's CCL training program. It's created to help all of our supporters connect with each other around the larger world and empower us to achieve our larger goals with climate advocacy. Thanks for taking the time to join us tonight. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and this week's essential training topic is hosting climate simulations in your community. Joining us will be the wonderful Andrew Jones, July's CCL monthly speaker and co-founder of Climate Interactive, and he's going to engage attendees with a review of Climate Interactive's new climate policy simulator, En-ROADS, which is built by MIT Sloan, along with Climate Interactive. And together, we're going to explore the power of a steadily rising price on carbon through policies like the Energy Innovation Act, as well as other strategies to address climate change to highlight complementary climate goals, including the impact of changes in energy, land use, consumption, agriculture, as well as a plethora of other policies Drew will walk us through. The team has also been recently engaging U.S. senators and other congressional staff on both sides of the aisle with this tool. So to get us there, let me welcome our wonderful speaker tonight. Drew Jones is co-founder and co-director of Climate Interactive, a think tank that provides modeling for climate policies and tools, giving policymakers and volunteers like us a realistic view of what's needed to contain global warming below 2 degrees Celsius. Drew will share details of this new policy tour, and if we've done our job well, all of us on the line tonight will be walking away with the following threefold learning goals. We're going to have the chance to understand the background and history of Climate Interactive's research to create En-ROADS and all of the work that put into making this simulation possible. We're going to have the chance to overview how to get more training after tonight, as well as the timeline for when to expect the tool to be available, how people can sign up, the other formats and topics that might be interested in. And then lastly, we'll walk through the considerations and process for how a CCL group or presenter might use the tool in a public event in your own community. So with that, I will pass it to you, Drew. We are all excited to have you here. Thank you for joining us again on this Thursday evening, and take it away from here.
All right. Thank you, Brett. Happy to be here. Appreciate that intro and welcome everybody. I'm thrilled that so many of you came back. It was great to meet many of you on Saturday for that call that we did, and happy to be here. Really, and I'm assuming this is going to be a follow-through, assuming that most all of you were able to see just an introduction to our tool. I just got to say personally, I said it Saturday, I'll say it again, I'm here and so excited for this time because I believe so much in the work that you're doing. I think it's really incredibly high leverage, and our mission is to empower people like you to make a difference getting these policies passed. So what I'm going to do is dive in and start, share some of the slides that we've pulled together. This is me. We built this model with MIT Management, the Sloan School of Management. That's where I studied. And I'm going to take a little bit of a step back so you get a little grounding of where do these guys come from, what's the history behind this, and a little bit of why we're confident that this is a tool that should be brought to the very top levels of leadership, the people who will be necessary to pass the bills to make the Energy Innovation Act happen. This is our little team. We come out of MIT, most of us modelers and technical people, but a lot of us communicators and translators. We're best known for this analysis. I don't know if you remember, but in Copenhagen at the Climate Accord that happened then, and then in Paris, for all those years, we've been running what we call the Climate Scoreboard. We have another simulation that adds up the pledges to the Paris Agreement and the Copenhagen Accord before it, saying if the U.S. reduced emissions 26 to 28% below 2005 by 2025, and if China peaked in 2030, what would we get? Would we get down to 1.5 or 2 degrees down here? Do you see this? I think you all know the answer is no. When we did the math, and there's another team in Germany that does it as well, it's aiming at about 3.3 degrees. So this is another bit of evidence of why a Energy Innovation Act is needed. First, to get us from 4.2 to 3.3, but then to close the rest of the gap. Even if everybody follows the Paris Agreement, we're not going to get there. But my point is more about this is where we come from. Building tools for decision makers. That tool is called C-ROADS. It precedes En-ROADS. We gave it to John Kerry and his team of the negotiators, Todd Stern and Jonathan Pershing. Those guys used the model in the State Department. We gave it to John Holdren, and he used it through the White House with the bilateral U.S.-China negotiations. So I went to Beijing, gave our model to the Chinese government. We'd already given it to the U.S. government. They both had the model, and they used it in the negotiation to confirm that one group was going to do one and action and another the other. And then if they said, if everyone else followed suit, here are the results we would get. Got to use it with the Dalai Lama once and build it into a game. So we have a game called World Climate. So it's a really good complement to the workshop I'm going to be introducing you to. It's open source, like the tool and model that I'm giving you. It's open source. So when we gave it away, it's been played. About 50,000 people have played this game, 85 countries all over the world. In that game, people play the roles of different parts of the world. This is when people were playing it in China and in Germany. We like it to be very experiential. We calculate sea level rise and put a blue tarp over people sitting on the floor who represent poor countries. And we found that 83% of the people who went through this experience reported they were more likely to take action. We had a peer-reviewed article done where we measure people before and after. These tools work. I said it before, research shows showing people research doesn't work. What you need to do is engage their hearts, their brains, in some experience with peers where they talk with people that they know, then they're much more open to changing their mind. Behind the model, of course, is a lot of science. And so I just thought I'd say a little bit about how we build confidence in a model like this. The approach really is about comparing our models to really big disaggregated models. These are these other future scenarios, number two, Energy Modeling Forum, the SSPs. We also have to make sure our model tracks history. We do extreme conditions tests. We push the model in the most extreme directions and see what it does. And we have an expert opinion, external review. For that, we are in the middle of the external review. And the reason that we're not, haven't released the model is that they're writing their letter to say what they think about the model. These are the scientists who are reviewing the model to make sure that it's really good. We use the best available science. There's this external review committee that's checked out the model that has confidence in it. The model was built, this team of Climate Interactive and MIT, really not connected to Citizen Climate Lobby. And the model and the previous models by this team have been used by the very top leaders and broadly accepted as using the best available science. And then when someone says, I'm concerned that you've cooked everything in here to say that it's really going to help it or have this kind of impact, it often helps to talk about the transparency. And very few models do this, which is to say, if you don't like the assumptions, we're letting anybody change them. And to see, is the policy being advocated for sensitive to different assumptions? So the biggest one in climate science is the sensitivity to a doubling of carbon. What if the world didn't warm that much because of accumulated carbon dioxide? This number could be lower. But the point is, assert the confidence in the model from the external reviewers, talk about the team that built it, and then really talk about the transparency, that if people aren't comfortable with assumptions, please dig in and change them, because many of them are changeable. The other point is transparency. You'll see that our assumptions are explicitly shared in the model. And really, with this model, we just have the confidence that it gets used. These are some of the groups that we presented to over the last couple months, Senate Democrats, House Republican staffers. I got to present to 40 of them and some governors. So these are some of the places that we've been using it. And that's just a little bit of background. Now, what we imagine, and we'll play with the model in a minute, but when I think of someone in the CCL, you're trying to get this bill passed and you're enrolling others, maybe legislators, the staffers. Here's the vision that we have once we release it. And one note, I haven't released this darn thing yet. We've got to get the letter from those reviewers. But when we do, this is my vision of how you use it. Any size group, one-on-one. This can be you and a person and a laptop. Or it could be you and 20 people in a room. I've done this with 400 people in a high school gym. Ideally, you've got one person who's a process facilitator, who's managing the conversation, one other person running the simulator. So maybe it's a little bit more of a people-oriented person and then a numbers-oriented person. That's ideally how you do it. I have to wear both hats today when I'm doing this. Then you're going to lead people through a set of questions. And the key to it, this cannot be a weapon. This can't be a, I have the truth, I'm going to give you the truth. Instead, you're the guide or support to people as their thinking partner. You're not a lecturer. You're helping them surface their assumptions, test their assumptions. There's a lot more to say about really expert facilitation here, but the key is that you are their thinking partner, not somebody there with a weapon beating them over the head with your view of the truth. So the workshop, and we'll do this in a minute. We should play with the model some right now because it's fun and you'll learn that way. It's really the things that I led you through on Saturday. What are the actions other than a carbon fee and dividend that seem like accessible, easier, but effective alternatives? The world, I would love it if we didn't have to pass this kind of bill in order to get the results that we really need. So what are those other things that people are talking about? Electrification, they're talking about afforestation this week, lots of other things. Secondly, what would be the impact of a carbon fee and dividend? And then third, what else is needed to complement that action in order to meet climate goals like 2 degrees or 1.5? And so I see a lot of people writing in here, regenerative agriculture, wind and solar, electric cars, direct regulation of greenhouse gas emissions. Let's start playing with some of these policies. Nuclear energy. Here's my simulator. You've seen it before, so I'm not going to go through the base explanation. I'll just catch you up that here we have how much coal we expect. There's a lot of coal in the world, people. A lot of coal. Oil gets more expensive in the latter half of the century. Gas gets more expensive in the latter half. And here's bioenergy, renewables, nuclear down here in light blue. And some people said nuclear. And so it's funny, people use this as a test of me sometimes. Like they want to see, am I open to even considering this future? So what if we imagine a future of nuclear? So I'm going to highly subsidize nuclear. You see the light blue line go up? So we can imagine this is a world which is about four times as much as the International Atomic Energy Association thinks is the high scenario. So this is off the charts high for how much nuclear we might see. If this were to happen, we would get temperature about 3.8 degrees down from 4.2. That would help a lot, but it is not sufficient to get all the way down towards 2 degrees. Just one note. So it's people will talk about it as if that's all we would need. It is not a silver bullet. It could help. It's not a silver bullet. Similarly, renewables are much more accessible sooner. Wind and solar, they could grow even higher, 3.7. Now, mind you, the world doesn't need wind and solar. The world doesn't need nuclear. What it needs to do is keep coal, oil, and gas in the ground. So what's powerful about renewables here is watch the coal line, brown line of coal going way down. That's what's really powerful about it, but still is not as effective as some of the policies that we were looking at when it came to a carbon price that we played with and we'll do in a minute. People are talking about regenerative agriculture, and there's a lot that can be done in these areas of technical carbon removal. But when you dig into the real estimates of what, say, agricultural soil carbon could retain, I'm going to increase it to the amount that a recent study said was possible from the Royal Society. And I'm going to even increase it here under assumptions and conditions. We've made these assumptions transparent. You can change them. Even if agricultural soil carbon were at the maximum of 10 gigatons a year, which is a lot, that brings us down 0.1 degree to 4.1. So storing a huge amount of carbon in the soil could help, but it is insufficient to do as much as we really need on its own. Someone asked about drawdown and refrigerant management. So that there's a lot of bang for your buck. That was the point of drawdown, saying we don't need to spend a lot of money and we could keep a lot of greenhouse gases out of the atmosphere. Mostly it's HFCs and other F gases. So if we go into here and we go into this area of energy and industry emissions and are able to get, say, a 50%, it could reduce temperature 0.2 degrees, which is a contribution. But when drawdown said it was the top action, it wasn't because of its scale that it could keep us so close to 2 degrees. It was because it's incredibly cost effective to do that. Others, energy innovation. People love talking about what if we have research and development into a new source of energy that's zero carbon. So we imagined thorium fission. We imagined nuclear fusion. What if it grew? What? I'm just hitting the button for breakthrough. It could keep carbon out of the atmosphere, but it takes 20 years. It's not 20 till 2040 that it's reasonable to imagine these actually coming online. And that's assuming a breakthrough in 2020. It takes time for commercialization. It takes time to grow to scale. We just don't have that time. And the beauty of carbon fee and dividend is that if it can happen in the near term, it can keep coal, oil, and gas in the ground in the 2020s and the 2030s, whereas some of these technologies don't get to scale and they don't mitigate carbon for another 20 years. The timing is critical. That's why it's so great that this could happen sooner. What are others people are writing here? Planting millions of trees. I'm going to crank that up to a high level, and it reduces another almost 0.1 degrees. But it is not a substitute for keeping coal, oil, and gas in the ground.
Can you show population and direct air capture? Those are both also popular.
Oh, great. So direct air capture, I'll go under here, in the same way as ag soil carbon. Direct air capture, here I'm going to go with the amount that this Royal Society study thought was possible. We're at 3.6 degrees. It doesn't even move us to 3.5. Now, if there's much more than people expect, and direct air capture is not half a gigaton a year, which is the low end of the estimate from the Royal Society, but is the upper end, then it does move at 0.1 degree. So the reasonable estimates of what these technologies, which are not yet invented at scale, could deliver is on the order of 0.1, 0.2 degrees. Now, I'm telling you it's silver buckshot. We may need carbon removal. But the meat and potatoes of this meal has to be something that keeps coal, oil, and gas safely in the ground. Now, let me just pause for a second. I'm presenting this to you, but what I hope I'm doing for you, you should think of this as me modeling to you the kind of conversation you can have and have much better in person with real people, where you're talking to them and they're offering these ideas and you're simulating them, acknowledging, as I'm trying to do, that they're legitimate and they can help some, but many of them are not going to work at the scale required to get towards 2 degrees. So imagine yourself asking about these other approaches, and it's similar with electrification. Well, I'm going to go turn off new tech. What does electrification and transport do absent a carbon price? Nothing. Where does the world get more electricity? It gets it from coal. So when I boost electrification, the brown line goes up. That is more coal. The red line of oil goes down. We have less oil, more coal, temperature stays the same. These other solutions are not contributing that much. Now, mind you, if we also have renewables, I'm going to turn it off, and if we also have renewables, then electrification can help because we have greened the grid. But absent a green grid, and I think the best way to green the grid would be with a carbon price. Then you have a carbon price, and then electrification can really help a lot. It can actually bring you down another 0.2 degrees. So the process is, what are the things, what are the alternatives, what are the competition for a carbon fee and dividend. We've gone through some of them. I'm rolling through, and there's so many others.
The other big one, I guess, Drew, if we're going to talk some options here, is can you adjust with the assumptions of a carbon price how the revenue is used? Is there possible ways that you can do it beyond a dividend?
So, and I'm just going to pick a random, I didn't choose your carbon price that's part of the Energy and Innovation Act. The short answer is no. We don't simulate what happens to all that money. Instead, what we do is we're going to just simulate how much money there is. And part of the game that we set up around this model asks people, what do you want to do with it? And we, of course, that's the time to talk about your proposal of a dividend, Saudi Aramco proposal, which is give it back to the oil companies, et cetera. So we don't model that explicitly. That is part of what's outside of the simulator, and it's so critical. The simulator doesn't do everything. It basically simulates up to the impact, the temperature, the revenue, and then I think it would be up to you all to talk about what to do with the revenue.
We're asking about population, I think, is the one left.
Thank you. I forgot that one. Okay. I had an interesting exchange with Ted Turner where he said, if you're not doing anything about population, you're not doing anything. It's all about that. Actually, before I run it, this is another thing you should do. After running the model 4, 5, 6 times, and people start to get a sense of how it works and what the drivers are, ask them to mentally simulate more. That is, before changing the population, say, what do you think? People start thinking with the model, and you might take a step back. In this one, I'm going to say, well, what is really driving emissions? And here you can see many of the things that are driving it. Here's the population that I assumed. Here we are at, 7.7 billion today in 7.7 billion heading up here towards a little over 11. GDP per capita, people are spending more money. Energy intensity is going down. We're getting more efficient. But these drivers of growth are driving carbon emissions up. What if we had a lower trajectory? What we did is we took the population trajectory from the UN. That's what this 2 is the UN middle range. And we allow you to move it all the way down. Here's 1 point. This is 90% between the low and the middle. 70% down to 60% between the low and the middle. We didn't allow to go all the way down to 1 because it's not accessible anymore. But what if we got to 9.6 billion people by 2100 instead of up here above 11? So run in your head, what do you think it would do? And then we'll go back here to the model and we'll see it shaves off about 0.1 degree. Again, not a silver bullet. Yes, possibly part of the silver buckshot. That was part of the drawdown book saying empowering women and girls can lower fertility rates. And perhaps that could be part of a combination of factors that could get us there. Absent a policy, we don't see any reductions happening in those, except for late in the century for oil and gas, because energy demand is growing. And so we're getting more and more and more. Now, we can have policies that directly confront them, natural gas. We could tax natural gas, et cetera. Are there others that you see, Brett?
The only other input one before we get more into these credibility questions or the assumptions baked into the model is how you would recommend comparing the Energy Innovation Act with another carbon pricing policy like what the Climate Leadership Council or perhaps another bill has. So, for example, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, HR 763, starts in the year 2020 with a $15 carbon fee that goes up immediately each year after by $10, so that by the year 2030, we'd be at $115 per ton, and by mid-century, we'd be $315 per ton. Now, that's provided, of course, that we're hitting the targets and that the fee increase doesn't go up a bit more annually to make sure that we continue to meet the emission reduction targets. Would you mind showing how to compare that and enter those inputs in?
Great. So this is the second question. I'm glad we got here. So this is, as I told you before, imagine yourself again in the room with whomever you want to work with. The first question, number one, what are the actions that are alternatives to this? Number two, what would be the impact of a carbon fee and dividend? And maybe this is where you say, let's look at someone else's proposal. And so we'll go here. I'm going to reset. This is where you reset the model. You type in your $15 a ton, starting to phase in. I'm going to be optimistic and put it in here in 2020. You have that $15 a ton. And then it should get to, if you add $10 a year for 75 years, that's going to add $750 to that 15. Goes all the way up here to 765 or so. So there we are. And this is how you would input that policy. Of course, your person may say, well, I want to do it sooner. What if we got up there sooner? You could change it like that, but why not do it exactly as I understand? And that's how you would input it to see that it gets us around 2.9 degrees by tipping coal down here in the 2020s. Oil, it's not until that oil price gets pretty high. As you know, $100 a ton on carbon is only a dollar a gallon on gas. So it's not till it gets higher out in the 2040s that oil really tips down. Gas tips down here. Renewables grow a lot. This is our simulation of the carbon price. Great. People are saying, how do we just share this? I'm going to go back and make sure people see this overall plan. Here's how I imagine this playing out, that we're going to release this in 2 to 3 weeks. It takes time. You've seen me answer a lot of questions. We're setting up a 7-part webinar series to really learn the model. We want you to have a chance, if you're curious and interested and committed, to really learn about various aspects of the model. And some of them, I talked about the squeeze the balloon problem. It turns out that there's a whole series of systems principles. My training was in what we call system dynamics modeling. And so I'm going to pull up some of these 10 dynamics in this complex system. We come out of a field, which is the study of complex systems. One of those is number 5, squeeze the balloon. I talked about that in the trainings. I'm going to talk to you about the others, like crowding out, where nuclear and renewables fight for each other for access, drivers of growth, the limits to growth story, about the other gases, bathtub dynamics, economies of scale. These are rebound effects, some of the things that we haven't even talked about here. That's what the training is going to cover, many of these different dynamics, to get you really prepared to answer a lot of the questions that are going to come up. I'm going to go back to the schedule. So what you'll do is watch that series. Then the best way is to apprentice to somebody else. If you can find somebody, we will be sharing people who are running workshops all over the place. Join them or watch the videos of us running them. And then we have some other trainings. We made a video, kind of a MOOC, an online course called The Climate Leader, that has many of the principles behind the model. If you're curious and you want to get going on something, go Google The Climate Leader. Here's the link. And it's a series of videos that I made with our co-director, Beth Sawin. Then what you're going to do is experiment with the model when you have it, and then you'll practice with your friends before you take it out to go to others. You'll hit many of these main points, though. There's no silver bullet. Many actions in many sectors are required, including carbon fee and dividend. We can do it, and there are co-benefits, like I mentioned before.
Just as a reminder, we do have all of these slides available, and that includes a handout that Andrew has generously shared that's a one-pager, this link right here, as well as a shorter guide, I believe an 11-page guide right now that's a little pre-release for CCL special. If you do have any questions, again, the 3 places to remember tonight, you can ask any question for Climate Interactive especially. That email is here. You can visit and sign up for updates here with N Rhodes. Drew's already shown that. And we will put a link to the training page for where this will be available when it's uploaded tomorrow with that short link too. So thank you all for being here. It is such an honor to see everyone. Drew, I'm going to unmute all lines because we're at the very top of the hour, and we're just going to get a raucous round of applause from everyone on the line still. It is so great to have you join us.
All right. Okay. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.